Hello, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Nation of Writers. This podcast is presented in conjunction with our new virtual exhibit, American Voices, which you can find and explore at nationofwriters.org. In this episode, we'll discuss the life and work of Toni Morrison. A writer who needs no introduction, Toni Morrison is one of the most cherished American authors, known for her iconic novels like Beloved, Song of Solomon, The Bluest Eye, and Sula. She earned numerous prestigious awards during her life, including the Pulitzer Prize, the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama, and the Nobel Prize in Literature. We're joined today by poet, essayist, and cultural critic Hanif Abdurraqib. He is the author of multiple books, including They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest, A Little Devil in America, In Praise of Black Performance, and many more. He lives in Columbus, Ohio. Abdurraqib is interviewed by Nikki Gaslani, Development and Member Associate for the American Writers Museum.
Hi, Hanif. Thank you for joining us today to talk to us about Toni Morrison. I wanted to give you the opportunity to first tell me a little bit about yourself and what you're up to and if there's anything you want to plug.
Not at the moment. You know, I'm kind of in an interesting space because I'm settling into a year where I'm not releasing a book, which means I feel really good about my opportunities to kind of, explore projects that I maybe could not have done last year when I had like not only a book out, but was, releasing a book. I guess I'm releasing the children's book or the picture book. But, you know, so much of that I feel a bit detached from because I wrote it so long ago, you know. And the real work of that book is the work of Ashley Evans. And so it feels good to be, to not release a book alone this year, I should say, and to release something collaborative, which I think maybe plays into my interest in broader collaborative projects.
Well, we are really excited to read that book, and I am certainly going to buy a copy for all of my nibblings this year and hopefully get them into your work, and also just social justice issues as well.
Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Of course.
I remember the first time that I read Toni Morrison. It was in high school, and we read The Bluest Eye. And for me, it really opened up so much for me. It was the first time that I read someone who was not a white male in high school, and the possibilities of what writing could do just was really transcendent for me. So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how you first encountered Toni Morrison's work.
In the library, there was a library that got built at the top of my street when I was maybe 11 years old. And when I was 12, I found the book Jazz in the library. And I really loved, it was one of those, there's those Morrison books, there's the editions that have the kind of simple covers with the large swooping letters. And the Jazz one was purple. And I just loved the color of it. And I read those, and I read Jazz, and I loved, you know, sound. I know it's a book that kind of takes its, borrows a title from the music and a genre, but it also is a musical book. And I, even then, as a young person reading, I was falling in love with the musicality that's present in language, and the kind of ways that I could allow myself to sink into that. And so Jazz was kind of a book that was built for me.
Very cool. Thinking about that, how Jazz, the name of the book, also kind of evokes that musical lyricism. I'm wondering if there's any other kind of specific writing styles or any other like structure or word choices in any of Morrison's writing that really stick out to you?
Well, I mean, structurally, what has always impressed me about Ms. Morrison's writing is that she's not, she's so often, in my opinion, and I guess this maybe isn't structural as much as it is thematic, but she so often writes away from shame, where I think in situations where some writers might write towards it, you know, and particularly when writing women, you know, when writing the stories of women, and particularly like in her earliest work, right? And she really, I think, generously writes both away from shame and writes with a purpose that is not always kind of beholden to catering towards the kind of comfortable resolutions that might be present in other novels when we're talking about Black, especially when we're talking about Black characters. And so I really grew to admire that, or admired it kind of right from the jump. And I also just like her repeated choices, like in Jazz, where she's able to kind of expand and extend a narrative to the point where, you know, multiple things are happening in multiple timelines that all tie back to central characters. And so, yeah, these are all kind of thematic choices, maybe structural in how they're executed, but, you know, really, really thematic in their choices. And, you know, I love Jazz. I feel like Jazz is, you know, it followed such a mighty and massive book, you know, followed Beloved. And because of that, I sometimes wonder if it got the love that it deserved. And I think Jazz was, I don't pay attention to timelines or to awards much, so I might have the timeline wrong, but I think Jazz came like right before she won the Nobel too. And so I think it maybe gets swept away in some of her accolades and worthwhile achievements, but I think that book is an extremely worthwhile achievement.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned talking about her writing and like the generosity towards like this idea of shame. And something that I've always admired in her writing is the way the characters are so multidimensional, right? Like for a lot of marginalized folks, and in writing, there's often this kind of stereotype that people with that white gaze want to see in the writing, you know. And so that's something that I appreciate. And I think in speaking of like structure, she was always really good at getting to like the human part of writing for her characters and seeing all of her characters as human. And for me, that makes Morrison's work like really relevant and enduring. And I was wondering what kind of things make Morrison's writing so relevant and enduring for you.
Dialogue, the way that she allowed her the fullness of her characters in their interactions with each other. They felt to me, have always felt like whole people through their tensions and through their triumphs and through their affections and failures. And getting to read a writer who seems to understand, and when Ms. Morrison talked often about turning away from the white gaze, right? Like, I think that's something that folks hear and triumph and all that, and that's great. But I think, you know, what she was also meaning on top of all of that is that these conversations in these worlds she was building for her characters to exist in could be flawed and still be good to the people in them. I just, when I say she's generous to her characters, I don't think she was obsessed with punishment for the Black folks in her books, at least not only punishment. And I think that alone is enduring.
How would you say that Morrison's life and writing have impacted your own work in life?
Well, I think more than her writing work is her editing work, which I return to. Now, of course, her writing work is singular, but she was also so committed to deconstructing the idea of the single genius, and she sacrificed her own work and time in order to seek out other brilliant writers. You know, before she put out her own book, she was like seeking, and making room for other brilliant black writers, black women specifically. And I think she knew what I know is what I imagine she also knew, because I pull it from her. So when you deal in these ideas of singular black genius, or when you give into them, because I think America at large loves to project that idea, that actually is a real enemy to accountability, and it's a real enemy to growth, and doesn't allow for us to sharpen our skills and insights against each other, not even in a competitive or rageful way, but in a way that's really steeped in care. And it's, you know, working away from that idea of singular black genius, I think also really serves this idea that we can continually learn from each other, and put each other in a position where we're never above. We're always kind of climbing together and never above. And so that's, I think, that is the thing I take from her work more than anything.
Yeah, I recently watched the documentary on her, and I was really struck by how many writers she encouraged and really helped them tell their story, or like found ways to kind of give them courage to write and tell their story. So with that in mind, where do you see Morrison's literary lineage today, continuing on even past her death? Like, what writers do you see that have been influenced by her and are continually influenced by her?
I never really answer this because for a few reasons. One, I never want to speak for other writers, and I don't want to project something on other writers that they might not want projected on themselves. But also because I think that there's just kind of like a long line of. So I count myself as someone who is inspired by Toni Morrison, right? But that also means that I am at my core inspired by the writers Toni Morrison edited and the writers that Toni Morrison was inspired by. And so I really believe in lineage as a long tree, with a tree with many branches. And I really also think that only the writers working through that lineage can define what that is for themselves. And so not that this is a great question, but I never answer it because I really believe in, particularly given Black writers, the space to self-determine their own lineage. So I don't want to say someone and they're like, I don't have a connection. And so I think I can only speak for myself there.
Oh, I totally respect that. I respect that answer a lot. Well, speaking for yourself, in what ways have you been influenced by Toni Morrison?
I think, particularly as I've gotten older in my writing life, I don't have, and some of this too is inspired by Zora Neale Hurston, who is another hero of mine. I believe wholeheartedly that my interest in explanation and making something palatable for an audience who is seeking comfort instead of curiosity and excitement, that is, my interest in that has gone away. And I think that Toni Morrison has really pushed me in that, with her work, with her interviews, with her thinking around, again, like decentering the white gaze is kind of the buzz note. But that's actually an entire kind of like atmosphere that you have to build for yourself. And I think, learning to build that for myself has been, really good. And I've really learned that from the blueprint that Toni Morrison has helped create.
This is kind of a silly question, but I am a fan of the playlists that you make. You make tons of them. So I was kind of wondering if you could make a playlist for Toni Morrison. What are the top five songs that you would put on that playlist? And also, if that's too much pressure, top five, like throw a couple songs off the top of your head.
Well, I think that the first song, I would go with a Nina Simone song, and I would go with a live Nina Simone song. Probably, that Live at Carnegie Hall album, I would probably go with Will I Find My Love Today off of that. And you said five songs?
If you got five, okay. I would feel a lot of pressure personally to songs. Okay.
there's an album called Money Jungle that came out in 1963, Duke Ellington, Charles Mingus, and Max Roach, that is this kind of brilliant but chaotic, somewhat forgotten jazz album. Where at the stage that it came out, like Ellington was a little bit older, and he was pulling along these two younger, more fiery jazz musicians who like were kind of had proven themselves, but were kind of in the ring with the master and fighting their way through it. And so I put the title track off that. So Money Jungle off of the album Money Jungle. I think if I had to, I want to bring something updated, kind of. So there's something I love about, do you know Ibei, the group, the two twins?
Yeah, I love friends? Them. Yeah.
There's something about their songs that I think are like haunting and just full. And I would go with Waves. Waves is the one. So I got two more left. So for me, you know, obviously Miss Toni Morrison is the greatest Ohio writer to ever live, but I think actually one of the great Ohio writers, maybe second or third after Toni Morrison, is Tracy Chapman. And I mean that in terms of, I don't mean songwriter, I mean writer. Tracy Chapman's a writer of I believe, novels and verse, particularly those first three albums. She was writing in every song, there was like a film unfolding. The answer, I think the easiest answer would be Fast Car, because I think that is actually, there are very devices unfolding in that song that are vital. But I'm gonna instead go with She's Got Her Ticket off of the same album, a little bit further down the track list. But I think that's actually a more subtle and beautiful ode to what Tracy Chapman did well and what Tracy Chapman and Toni Morrison have in common, I think, in terms of their ability to kind of like move forward a narrative in a small space. I think Toni Morrison would love Lil Sims. I don't have any obvious, you know, I don't have any intel on that, obviously. But I feel like if I could sit down and show Toni Morrison the music video for Point and Kill, I would hope that there would be something in there that would thrill her as it thrilled me when I first saw it for the first time. So I would add Point and Kill by Lil Sims, but with the caveat that I would just adore the opportunity to show her the video.
Yeah, I love that. As soon as you said Lil Sims, I thought of the first song that I heard by Lil Sims, which is Boss. And also at the same time, I was like, yeah, Toni Morrison.
Yeah.
Boss. Would you name the playlist for Toni Morrison, like a straightforward for Toni Morrison, or would it be something a little bit more creative?
I'm bad at naming playlists. I think there's a real joy in naming the playlist exactly what it is. And so I would just call it five for Toni Morrison.
Cool. well, with a current playlist, information here. How do you think Morrison would be engaging with our current world today?
Well, that's another one of those things where I don't know if it's super generous of me to speculate, but I will say that, you know, at the point where she was still alive and you know, aging to a point where she was kind of, you know, I think working less frequently and doing interviews less frequently and all these things, the world was simultaneously kind of entering an era of what I like to consider the same or similar violences, just manufactured in new ways. But I also do wonder, you know, so many of us, myself included, have been isolated the past couple of years. And there are ways that I feel like that has impacted my work, because it's impacted my thinking and it's impacted my energies and literally, like, not energies in a spiritual way, though truly that too, but very literally energies in like a mental capacity for things. And so I find myself often asking how would my writing heroes of the past, the ancestors I've leaned on, what would they make on of this time? And what would they make of this era we're in, this era of isolation? Because I think they would have better insights on it than I would, but I don't know. I can't really speculate.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I oftentimes think about in my head, having so much time alone, like what would this past person who has given me so much solace in reading or experiencing their art, like how would they be getting through this, or what would they have to offer? But it is always hard to speculate. I did want to kind of go back. You mentioned when we were talking about playlists, Ohio. I know Ohio is very important to you. And I was wondering how Ohio as a place kind of shows up in Toni Morrison's writing, and how that has kind of, how place and environment kind of affects writing, and specifically Toni Morrison's writing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think for me, place is always present in my work, because, you know, I write in a, only because I write in a place that was home and is still home to a lot of, to a great many writers. And so it's interesting to me because, you know, there are Morrison books where she fictionalizes in Ohio. That to me does not feel fictional, right? It feels very real. You know, setting like Sula in a small and rich and dense but flawed Ohio town. You know, I think Toni Morrison, I think Black folks in Ohio who came up here see and understand Ohio in a specific way that the rest of the country sometimes does not. And so it almost feels as though there's responsibility to attach a fullness to the Ohio that I know in the way that I've seen other writers before me do. And so place is important to me. And I imagine that place is perhaps important to Toni Morrison, because there's an opportunity to represent somewhere you love in a language in a language and in a population that is not always recognized by the folks outside of your orbit.
So you've already talked a lot about Jazz and how that is one of your favorite novels by Toni Morrison. But do you have any other favorite passages or quotes or stories from her?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jazz is my favorite, and it is my favorite because of the ending line, "Look at where your hands are now." But yeah, I mean, I also love Paradise. Sula, great. You know, there's, I, don't know. I love most every book that Toni Morrison's ever written, and but Jazz is the one that sticks out to me, in part because of the musicality of the language and that ending. But I also like notoriously have a someone got me like a flag a while ago that has the quote "Yes, but my lonely is mine" on it, which is, you know, one of my like actual favorite Toni Morrison passages. It's from Sula, where it's, "Yes, but my lonely is mine. Now you're lonely as somebody else's, made by someone else and handed to you. And ain't that something, a secondhand lonely?" And I really, I mean, that's just like one of my favorite moments in literature, right? There's something really joyful, I think, too, when I talk about Miss Morrison writing her characters with a fullness and a pleasure. There's something that in that too that is, and away from shame, like even writing away from the shame of loneliness, which is again ties back to my interest in how, you know, Toni Morrison would perhaps classify our current moment of isolation.
I love that. I love that quote as well. There's just so many great lines, and I'm most familiar with The Bluest Eye. So the last page or so of Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye always stuck out to me. And even just like that beginning first line of quiet as it's kept.
Yeah.
Always really stuck with me.
Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, she was so good at both starting and ending a book, I think. Of course, everything that happened in the middle, also very pleasurable for me. But I think as a book, as a novel ramps down, you know, it felt like she always had a real mind around how to dismount and how to leave people, how to exit. And that's, to me, challenging. The exit's always challenging. And so I admire her. I admire her closing efforts always.
Yeah. In talking about this, it kind of made me think about some of like her own process that I've heard about. And it always seems like she had like an idea or a thread of something in her head, and she would, you know, write down notes. She was a mother and she didn't have much time to, you know, sit down for like days on end to write something. So, I mean, Angela Davis talked about how she'd drive with her to New York and just pull out a pen in the middle of traffic, like at a stoplight, and write something down. And so I always think that's interesting about like how she was able to hold on to all of these little threads of something and turn it into something larger and really profound.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that for me, like, you know, I don't know. She's so good at kind of this idea of exploration and continued exploration. And like you said, like chasing after the one thread, but then like not stopping and allowing herself to kind of keep moving and keep moving and keep moving. It sometimes truly feels like we are figuring out the story along with her. And that I think is a real bonus and a real benefit.
Well, I don't have too many other questions to ask you. But since we are the American Writers Museum, I do feel like that I have to ask this. The idea of American is something that is really complicated and problematic at times. But what do you think makes Morrison's writing uniquely American?
I don't know if anything does. Maybe this is cynical, I don't know, but I don't know if any Black writer's writing can be uniquely American, because again, you're like writing towards an experiment that did not include you. And so I suppose, you know, and you're using a tool that was, you know, denied to at least perhaps your ancestors. And so I don't know if anything that Black writers do is, or my hope is that, I guess I can't speak for all Black writers. I don't know if there's anything that makes Toni Morrison's work uniquely American, because at least for me, as I read it and I love it and I learn from it, it's not, it is not with the kind of, I'm not aiming to be uniquely American, and I hope that maybe Toni Morrison was not either.
I definitely see that as well. For me, she was definitely writing for Black people, and with the hope that more than just Black people read it. And I always struggle with the idea of what is American. I did see a quote of hers talking about the idea of a melting pot and Black people kind of being that pot that holds everyone else together in a way, you know, like, okay, yeah, there were Italian Americans and then there were Jewish Americans, but at least we're like not Black. Like that was kind of like a uniting thread for people.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like a cynical way of her looking at American, but also something that I feel and I hear. And that's something that for me, I think that her work really helps kind of like unpack and make people feel uncomfortable in a way that helps bring kind of to light, like kind of all of this, like kind of internalized white supremacy that we have as a nation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't think cynicism is bad. I think cynicism for me has been very grounding. And so I appreciate the moments of, I appreciate those moments of clarity that have burst through my moments of cynicism. And I feel like Toni Morrison had a lot of those as well.
Well, that is about all I've got for questions. I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk with us about Toni Morrison.
Of course, I appreciate you having me.
Have a good evening.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Nation of Writers Podcast, part of the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. If you would like to learn more about American writers and their impact on our history, our culture, and our daily lives, find us online or come see us in person. The American Writers Museum is open Thursdays through Mondays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Once again, thank you for listening, and to all you writers out there, thank you for writing.